If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Walking out of the Munich tunnel, just being asked if I've got any gloves. I wear mittens, me mate.
Hey. I like it.
So we're in a good mood, and I'm with Ben Thornley, Salford lad from the wrong side of the canal. I'm from the right side, obviously, Urmston and Stretford, and we're both buzzing because United have knocked Liverpool out of the FA Cup. And we're just coming up to one of Liverpool's two team buses, and it says on the side of it, "We are Liverpool. This means more." No, it doesn't.
No, obviously not.
Because you ain't got Wembley in the FA Cup this year, boys. Should we just... Cheers.
Good night,
cheers.
See you later. Yeah.
Just saying goodbye to the hard-working security and stewards at Old Trafford. What would you do to go on that Liverpool bus now? And wind him up? Well, you're going to lose your job again, aren't we? So... Right,
I think you're desperate for me to lose my job, aren't you? There's no question.
So I wanted you to run on the pitch at Anfield.
Yeah.
If United had got a winner.
Yeah.
And you would have lost your job, but you would have also been a lifetime hero among United fans, and I reckon that they would have paid for you until you retired. But today, you actually could have gone on the pitch, and you've let everyone down because United won.
I know. But do you know what? Out of the corner of my eye, I could see Tony, the head groundsman. And as much as even these days I might get away from Tony, he would not have been very happy with me for running on that pitch. So, no, I've got a lot of respect for him, and he has that pitch in absolutely blinding it. And I didn't want to encroach upon it, so I left it alone.
So I had a complaint this morning about the sound quality of these podcasts when we record them at stadiums, and there was just a big screech.
Are we doing all right? You okay?
Then
yeah.
On that. See you later. It's great because everyone's buzzing. But most of the United staff, the United fans, the local people. Anyway, that big screech is after the game. People are taking away the TV equipment, some of the groundworks. This is real life, freezing your nuts off. That's what this podcast has always been about. And when it's at its best, it's leaving the away end after United have won a match or famously lost at Bournemouth, when everyone's steaming, coming out, "That's absolutely shit. Van Gaal's a tar. He's got to go. But today, Ben, beating Liverpool, knocking them out of the FA Cup, I thought it was a great game of football. How did you view it as a former professional footballer?
Yeah, I did as well. I thought both teams, when you saw that the starting lineup, certainly from Manchester United, you could see that you were going to get a different game than the one we got at Anfield last week.
Why?
Because it's a one-off. And it's a game that neither team would have wanted to go into extra time or penalties. I know there's no replays, but with the number of games that we've got coming up and the number of games that both teams have already played, with Europe starting as well, etc., I just think that it was an extra half hour of football that both teams could have done without. And it just made for a more open game. I think Ollie's team selections suggested that, with playing three out and out forwards in Cavani, who I thought was excellent, Greenwood, who took his goal really well, and Marcus, who obviously took his goal brilliantly, and you won't see a better pass all season for me than the one that he picked out from Mason's first goal. And it wasn't the fact that it was, number one, because he was right on the touchline, that he saw him. A little cheeky one for you. Ole Gunnar in his interview said you can thank the bench for that, because it was the bench that said switch, switch, switch. And we could see it from our position. We saw Mason herring through the middle, but he still did that with absolutely no backlift whatsoever. He had no room to manoeuvre, and it was just pinpoint his pass.
Walk towards your car, eh?
Yeah, yeah. It was absolutely pinpoint his pass, and I just felt, though, that it was just a game that highlighted the two teams who've got exceptional players on show, because the pendulum swung from side to side. Liverpool went in front and they had the momentum. Then United equalised out of pretty much nothing, and that came from Paul Pogba's tackle on the edge of the box, by the way.
Yes.
Who again put a shift in.
Yeah.
And then it was United, and then at the start of the second half it was United, and they deservedly went in front. Then we gave the ball away, which was the only downside to the
Cavani's game.
To Cavani's game, and for the game in general from a United perspective, because they did it a lot in the first half.
Yeah.
And they weren't punished, and it's such a shame that it was through him that they were punished, because like I said, I thought he was just one of the top performers. Without getting his name on the score sheet, he sacrifices a lot of his own good, a lot of his own work, or what he is good at, for the good of the team, and I just thought he was brilliant today. So that was the only downside, that they gave the ball away too many times, and against a team, you know, packed with the quality of Liverpool, you can't do that, and we were punished. But do you know what, if they score two, we score three. That's always been the United way. We score more than they do and we win the game. But if they can eradicate those little mistakes of giving the ball away, then we could have teams put to the sword a lot earlier.
So the roars of the cars going past are some of the players going home, and the team buses are going past. You can hear that. You can see the stadium. Looks beautiful tonight. It's really freezing. I'm going to walk towards your car with you, Ben, because
you've got no bloody
more
gloves on.
This
no
podcast's
mittens on.
Got to go tonight. A couple of things you mentioned. So Maguire's ball to Cavani. There's nothing wrong with that when he lost the ball. And I just asked Ole Gunnar about Cavani, because I thought he had a great game.
Yeah.
And I spoke to Darren Fletcher at half time, and he was raving about Cavani, about his vision, about how he sees the lines before
yeah.
anybody else. Can you make sense of that, what he says?
Absolutely.
What does he mean by that?
What he means is that before the ball actually comes to him, he knows what he's going to do with it. He knows whether he's hanging on to it. He knows whether he's bringing it in. He knows how far away the defender is from him. And on that, and sadly, on that particular occasion, he didn't need to play the ball first time. If you remember, he did one in the first half, and he nearly got Marcus Rashford through in the middle. It's having that. Few players have got it. It's having that wherewithal to know what you're going to do with the ball even before it comes in. And it was just such a shame that on that occasion James Milner had read what he was going to do, and he nipped in, and obviously Liverpool went and scored the second goal. But for the most part, you can see exactly what it is that he's got in his mind, and anybody who's been in the game a while will understand that and know what Darren Fletcher's talking about.
Where have you parked your car, Stoke?
I'm down there.
That's a bike. You don't come
there,
here on a bike.
Oh, there I am. There, silver BMW.
Cycled
here.
He cycled here.
Sorry, mate.
Former Aberdeen and Huddersfield and Manchester United player has cycled.
Normally, I'm a bit closer than this.
Yeah. And another thing Darren said, and Darren's really enjoying what he's doing.
Well. Yeah.
At United, and he's knowledgeable, yeah. And he's watching games from high up in the stand so that he gets a different perspective to the lads on the bench. He's basically looking at all different areas around the first team, and I think he's a real asset to have. I think he's a top lad, Darren, and he's a bright boy. He speaks well. He's deeply passionate about football, to the point he's a bit of an anorak. You know, he'll ask you questions about bizarre Spanish teams and stuff. And one thing he also said was, when you mentioned that Rashford pass, he didn't think he was going to get it off because his feet at the start were too close together, and I would never see something like that. And so when he got that pass, which went right over Milner to set up Mason Greenwood, I've not seen a better pass this season.
Me neither.
In fact, this week, with Pogba's goal at Fulham, and with that pass, that's the best pass and best goal I've seen this season.
I couldn't agree more. And it's a little bit like If you remember the goal, the fabulous free kick he scored at Chelsea, when and he does run up like with his feet as if he's you know, as if somebody's going to say go, and he's off. He doesn't have a wide stance, so it's great for him to have been able to pick that out. But it's something that Marcus can do brilliantly. He doesn't have to have that wider gap to be able to set himself to do things. And but that pass for me, it wasn't the fact that he didn't, it was how wide his feet were. It was the fact that he didn't even, you know, most people step back from the ball and need to take a little run to be able to hit a ball with that accuracy, that distance. And he did it from virtually a standing start. It was an amazing pass.
Donny van der Beek started a game. When we spoke a couple of weeks ago, he'd done all right. I thought he did all right again today. I don't think he's spectacular as the first player to come off. I thought he started the game brightly. What is your assessment of van der Beek, and what does he bring or what doesn't he bring to the team?
I think he's an intelligent footballer, and certainly in close-knit proximity, he is somebody that will definitely keep the ball for you. Again, somebody else who I think is a lot more switched on upstairs knows what he's going to do with the ball before it comes, and that's a huge asset. And that is something that he's obviously learnt growing up and being with the Ajax Academy, because they do that sort of thing all the time, you know, spatial awareness, etc. He obviously isn't the quickest at being able to carry the ball, which is something that obviously Paul Pogba is exceptionally good at. Scott McTominay, towards the end of the game, striding out with you know, 50, 60 yards. It's a huge asset to have. I think what Donny will bring is that intelligence and that little bit of link-up. But whether he's shown sufficient so far to be able to dislodge Bruno, I don't think anybody will go as far as to say that. But that's not to say that with each game that he plays and the fact that he's playing with and training with these great players, that when he does get the... I listened to Bruno's interview, and he was really pleased with how Donny performed, and that, you know, even though we are pretty much vying for the same position, he said that, you know, he can't do much more than what he did today, other than, you know, go and score two or three. For the fact that he'd not played for a while, he thought that, yes, he did fade a little bit, which is why he came off. But as you quite rightly pointed out, Andrew, he started the game very, very brightly and did some really, really good things. And he just needs to be a little bit more like Bruno and get hold of the game by the scruff of the neck when the ball gets to a certain area. And that is obviously in the final third where things are key.
I just spoke to James Milner, and one of the things he said unprompted, because I was asking him about Liverpool, was when you're playing a team as good as this. And I thought it's quite nice to hear Manchester United being complimented again by players like him, because he's a pro. I've spoke to lads, they really rated Milner, really, really surprisingly so.
Yeah.
And to see United win that game, to see United going through two games against the league champions, one draw away at Anfield, beat them at here, there's a consistency coming now, isn't there, with this team?
There is, and that is exactly... I mean, they still... I don't want to tempt fate, but they still haven't lost the consistency away from home. But what they have done is they found it at Old Trafford. I think that was a real key. Because, you know, our four defeats that have come this season, or five if you include Paris Saint-Germain, but our domestic defeats, three in the league and one against Man City, have all been here at Old Trafford. So that is something that we need to stamp out. But going back, our league defeat, our last one was against Arsenal in, was it September
End
or
of
October?
September.
Yeah, so
it's a long time ago.
It's a long while ago. And there is some consistency, and I agree with you. I think James Milner, who I think now is the fifth highest appearance maker in the Premier League, I think he's been a consummate professional for years. Wherever he's been, he's always done well. I know that my England colleagues... Sorry, I say England colleagues. My ex-colleagues who played for England, the likes of Gary, who I know you know well, have always had a lot of good things to say about James Milner.
Do you think if Gaz was on this podcast, we'd get a word in?
I don't know. I mean, I'm going a little bit hoarse now, but if Gaz was here, that wouldn't be an issue.
You'd be fine. And then I spoke to Ollie after the game as well. And
see you, Ash.
He's happy.
Man?
And obviously, he's happy. And I asked him about Luke Shaw, because Luke's having a good season. And on Friday, I asked him about Paul Pogba. What's he doing well? What's Paul doing well? Well, he's a good player, he said. And obviously, he's going to say that. And he's quite media trained already. He bats away the questions unless you're asking him about his favourite food, where he reckoned that his favourite Indian is a chicken korma, and he's quite rightly been slated for
I wish I'd have heard that.
Harry's. Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with overpriced razors, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so they brought their own factory in Germany, and that's been making blades for over 100 years. They've now released their sharpest ever blades and added a new lubricating strip for an even closer, more comfortable shave. The best part? Replacement blades are still as little as £1.75 each. Harry's support great causes too. They give 1% of their global sales to non-profit organisations that provide mental health care to men in need. Do you want to give Harry's a go? Start your subscription with a trial set which includes a weighted ergonomic handle, their new 5-blade razor cartridge, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover to protect your blades on the move. And for a limited time, if you go direct to harrys.com/United, you'll also receive a free travel sized shower jam. All of this is worth £14.50, but you'll pay just £4.95. So get the comfortable shave that you deserve. Head to harrys.com/United to claim a trial set for just £4.95. You'll also be supporting our podcast by doing so. Again, head to harrys.com/United today.
Shaw's doing well, isn't he?
Brilliant. He's had a super season, and I don't think it's a coincidence that with the arrival of Alex Telles, he's had to up his game a little bit, and rightly so. But I think that's healthy. That's competition that you need all over the place, and it has certainly worked for Luke Shaw, knowing that his position isn't that secure anymore. But I think he has been absolutely magnificent for 8 to 10 games now. I think he's produced starman performances. I know that Mohamed Salah scored 2 today, but invariably Salah doesn't get a kick against Luke Shaw. He plays that well against him, and again today, especially in the first half when we were exploiting those spaces left by Alexander Arnold up that left hand side with Marcus going one on one with Williams and skinning him a number of occasions, and Luke Shaw going on the overlap. It didn't happen quite as much in the second half, but certainly in the first half they were a joy to watch, and I think Luke has been absolutely superb.
And then I mentioned Pogba, and I wrote a piece about him on Friday. I tell you for a fact that he's very happy at the moment. I could absolutely see him staying at United if it carries on like this. His confidence is up. He probably took longer to get over COVID than any of the other players who've had COVID. This isn't just speculation. This is based on facts and speaking to people. And he had to have individual training sessions for him to help him get his fitness back. But we're seeing the lad who scores. He didn't score today, but scoring match-winning goals, great match-winning goals from outside of the area. And something you said earlier, that first goal started from him winning the ball on the edge of his own area. And there's times when he still does give the ball away. And United did a lot of that in the first half today.
Especially, but yeah.
Pogba, that's Liverpool's team bus. This means more. No, it doesn't. It can still produce the spectacular, doesn't it? And if we can get that more often, and he can become as consistent as the team, we might be seeing that world-class play we've all hoped for years.
And I think people will undoubtedly warm to that. You know, we all know what it means to be a Man United fan. You know, we know some of the hardcore support. They just want everybody in a Man United shirt to give 100%. They only care about going out and winning football matches. They know that there are other things that come with being a professional footballer, and that all gets, you know, a blind eye turned to it, as long as when you put that shirt on, you instantly let people know that you are playing for that badge and giving everything. And Paul Pogba at this moment in time is doing that, and it's amazing, not just the transformation of him, but the transformation of the team. And he is a big cog in a very, very big wheel. But he is certainly somebody that in the last 5 or 6 games, especially when he's got himself around the pitch when he scored goals, and today when he's winning balls on the edge of his own box, you know, they are things that midfielders at Man United need to be doing on a more regular basis, and he is leading the way in doing that at the moment.
Another time he stretched to block a ball just before half time.
He did, yeah, right, really? On this near side, yeah. And if that ball had made, then there was a clear run for I can't forget
whoever
who it was,
down the right.
For right hand side, and he just managed to get himself in a position to be able to do that. And he's playing that position, and then he's moved slightly forward in the second half in a position where we've seen him play really, really well and scored his goals from, and where he played very well against Liverpool last weekend. He is a player that is integral to Manchester United and their success if he continues to perform the way he's been doing.
I know he's got to win the favour of some fans, including myself. People have been let down too many times by him. If not him, by his agent coming out. But his agent, those comments were panicky. He knows he shouldn't have said them at the time he did. And some other things about Paul. I've never heard anyone inside the club complain about his professionalism. He's never late. He doesn't drink alcohol. He's big into his faith, like his hero Muhammad Ali, converted to Islam. He's since his father's died, his family and his football's really become his focus. He's ultra competitive, and sometimes if we were saying that, people don't want to hear it, because if he's had a bad game or if his agent's come out and said something stupid. And there's times where he's definitely wanted to go because he's been deeply unhappy. And I'm not going to sit here doing a PR for him. He's got to be doing this all the time. But the last 6 weeks has been really good.
It has. It has. And listen, people don't realise that footballers are human beings as well. And there are extenuated circumstances when you know, from time to time in people's lives, like, you know, the death of a close one or a relative. Of course that's going to affect you, and it's going to affect the way that you do your job. You wouldn't be human if you didn't. But because he's in the public eye all the time and playing for Manchester United, there's no room for interpretation, and it is something that people do need to take into consideration.
Have you been there?
Exactly.
You've been a pro at a club where, you know, you've had a more serious injury than most people. I bet you had times where you're incredibly down and thinking about your future.
Massively. Absolutely, massively. And it does happen. And it happens at all different times of people's careers. And at the moment, Paul Pogba seems to have... I don't want to say sorted himself out. What he seems to have done is he'd be proving to people that he is a Manchester United player. He wants to be a Manchester United player. He is performing well as a Manchester United player. And he, as a Manchester United player, he is, like I've already said, he is one of the key people that are going to bring this club success if he continues to perform like that.
Apart from your injury, finally, when was a time when you were really down about your football? Were you in a hotel in Aberdeen or in Huddersfield thinking, I'm just not enjoying this profession at all?
I would probably say if I was in a hotel in Aberdeen, I probably wasn't on my own.
What, did Gaz go up and visit you?
But yeah, listen, there are always going to be times when you're down, and it probably was Aberdeen when I fell out of favour with the manager, and you're a long way from home and you're not being taken with the squad, and you do have a tendency to think to yourself, well, what is it next? And unfortunately for me, and anybody that, you know, that has read my book and what have you, they know that I took the wrong path, and, you know, I just used that as an excuse to go out drinking all weekend, and all that did was depress me even more when I came round and realised that I needed to do something about it. And everybody needs people, Andrew. Everybody needs people. And there are times when you are down, but I'm lucky, I like a lot of people, that they've got close friends, they've got really great family that they can turn to and rely on and point you in the right direction, and that's what happened.
I wasn't going to plug your book, but there's some absolutely wank footballers' autobiographies. Yours isn't. There's some really good stories in there, and parts of it are pretty heavy. But I'm not going to finish this podcast talking about you in an hotel room in Aberdeen. There were some moments of joy, no? If you had to pick a couple of moments out from your career, I don't know. From the outside, maybe it was your Manchester United debut. But
yeah. I think that as a kid living only 5 minutes from where we're standing now, and having watched the greats like Brian Robson, Frank Stapleton, Norman Whiteside from my era, players that I still see on match days here today, sadly not at the moment, it was an incredible privilege for me to make my debut. Yes, I know that the winning of the FA Youth Cup with those great players that I played with came first, but actually pulling on that Man United shirt, knowing that you're actually going to get on the field against West Ham, as I did in 1994, that is something that I wanted to do since I was a kid, and that now that I have done it, as much as it didn't happen anymore, well, many more times than and certainly not as much as I would have wanted, it's something that nobody can ever take away from me, and it will be a cherished moment till the day that I die.
And you're doing now the match commentary for MUTV. You enjoying it?
Love it, absolutely love it. We've got a great team at MUTV. Not just Stuart Gardner that I work with, but the cameramen, the people behind the scenes that we speak to, producers, everybody, and obviously the other ex-players that come in and do the punditry and what have you. It's a cracking setup, and I really do enjoy it. And of course, you're going to enjoy it when Man United are winning matches, and that's what they're doing at the moment. But I love doing it anyway. I'm very privileged, I must admit, very privileged.
I don't think I told you this, but last year somebody wrote to When Saturday Comes, which is a really good football magazine, and it was a United fan, and the person was blind and said how much he or she enjoyed listening to your commentary because you were very descriptive. And I just thought that was beautiful. A blind person there listening to your words and feeling like they're there.
Oh, well, that's extremely pleasing to hear, but it's also very humbling as well, that somebody has taken the time to do that. And listen, I love what I do, and I want people to enjoy what I do as well. Otherwise, there's not really much point. So when I hear things like that, it's very humbling, but very pleasing at the same time.
Yeah, but it's getting a bit like Alan Partridge's now. What about some quick fire questions like I gave Ollie? Right, who's the hardest player you ever played with?
Roy Keane.
Yeah?
Yeah. Nicky Butt comes a close second.
Hard lad.
Yeah,
I think Ryan's an hard lad.
He is, yeah. Yeah, on the sly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Funniest lad you've ever played with?
I mean, there's a few, but Marcus Stewart at Huddersfield takes some beating.
Why?
He had a tendency to sit in the dressing room and do daft things, and funny lad, Marcus Stewart. Yeah, he's a great lad.
Fastest player
that I've ever played with.
Yeah,
it'll either be Colin McKee or Keith Gillespie.
Really?
Yeah, I would say so. Along with Ryan as well.
Favorite ground you played at?
One of my favorite grounds, because I always seem to play well, that was Carrow Road.
At Norwich?
Yeah, I always played well at Carrow Road. But I do like Molyneux as well.
Which United player would you have most liked to have had on your team at the subsequent clubs that you played at?
That's a great question. I mean, probably Scholesy.
Yeah.
Because he can make something happen anywhere.
At Huddersfield Town, Scholesy.
Anywhere, yeah. Anywhere. It doesn't matter what. I've seen Scholesy score an unbelievable goal on a cabbage patch out in Hong Kong, so if he can do it there, he'll do it absolutely anywhere. He just would have pulled something out of the bag from whoever you were playing.
Who's the wittiest player you played with?
Oof.
Not an out and out practical joker, because I think that Scholesy's got a lining killer wit.
He has got a good
usually
lining
against Mr. Neville.
Yeah, but you mentioned Mr. Neville. Phil Neville's got a good tongue on him as well. When if you that sounded wrong, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
So you're in an hotel room in Aberdeen with Phil Neville,
and you cut to the good tongue. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He can. But yeah, Scholesy comes out with these little retorts from the corner of the dressing room. Phil Neville was exactly the same.
Finally. Will United win the league this year? Is it possible? Because I keep saying no, 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 but I'm just sort of buffering myself against what I think will be disappointment, and I'm starting to believe a little bit more now.
Yeah, listen, will they win the league? Who could possibly know? Who knows? Can they win the league? 100%, absolutely. I think they've proved that after half a season, they've finished on top of the pile. And all they need to do is replicate what they've done. They obviously need to get a couple of decent results against teams in the top six that they haven't yet beaten. But if they can rectify that, I think they've beaten one of the best teams in the country for the last 2 years today. I know they've got players missing. I think that they will need to improve performance against the teams at the top, City, Chelsea, Tottenham, and obviously Liverpool again when we play them in the league. But do you know what? I think that Man United are as close as they have been in the last 7 or 8 years. Like I said, are they going to win it? I don't know. Can they win it? 100% yes, they can.
Going to run back to the car now going, United, United, United.
Thank you, Ben.
Pleasure, Andrew. Top man.